Welcome to Reading the Grid, the podcast fueling your Formula One passion. Each week, we explore the stories behind books, movies, and shows that highlight the history of this dynamic sport. Buckle up for a fast-paced journey through Formula One. Now let's jump into it. This week, we dive into episode 3 of Drive to Survive, season 7. Titled Looking Out for Number One. Initially, producers lead you to think that the episode will be focused on Lewis Hamilton looking out for himself with his very surprising announcement that he is leaving Mercedes after 12 years to drive for Ferrari. We see throughout the episode that there are really three individuals at Mercedes that are looking out for number one: Lewis Hamilton, Toto Wolff, and George Russell. However, the episode really tries to frame the focus on the next chapter of Mercedes, George's progression as a driver and a leader, and ultimately who Toto will select to replace Lewis and fill the empty Mercedes seat.
This is the most misleading and disappointing episode of Drive to Survive. As you may remember from our discussion of season 6, we were concerned that the drama depicted in Drive to Survive at times seemed very manufactured, manipulated, and staged, and the authenticity of real behind-the-scenes insights was being compromised. This episode showcased that these concerns were justified. There were a lot of action and developments that Netflix chose not to include, and in one instance, they even undercut the outcome of a race. The only things that I think that Netflix gets right are scenes from the press conferences, although they miss quite a few. There's also the fact that Carlos Sainz was considered to fill the Mercedes seat, although Netflix does not spend a lot of time on deliberations or pointing out any flaws in Sainz. This is likely because they already slotted Sainz as one of the heroes of the season and want to frame it as Ferrari doing a great injustice by denying him a seat, so they do not want any negativity or concerns that color that portrayal. Another thing they get right is Toto's pursuit of Max Verstappen. It was really a hot rumor that went on from race to race. However, there is very little new or interesting information that comes out in Drive to Survive. The most obvious insight is that Toto is shown talking with Jos Verstappen and explaining that he talks with him quite regularly. The snarky remark by Christian Horner is very telling. Toto is sending love letters to the other drivers. Why isn't he giving George the love?
The most interesting insight for me, and I wish they gave more context and elaborated a bit more, was when Toto was sitting outside with Susie having breakfast, and he says that I promised Lewis I wouldn't talk to Max, so I haven't. I would love to know a little bit more about that. Was it after 2021? Was Lewis didn't want him as a teammate?
I think it could have happened before 2021, because I think when Max Verstappen was shown to be so good, but Red Bull wasn't there yet, and Valtteri Bottas was a great number two, but was never going to set the world afire, I could see Toto thinking, can I steal Max? Because remember, this is not shown in Drive to Survive. But the biggest regret of Toto's life is not signing Max Verstappen when he was a junior driver, which will drive him to make the choice he makes at the end of this episode. So I think he always tries to rectify this mistake.
Yes, and when we get into one of our silly season rumors, I think there's a lot of foreshadowing in this episode.
Definitely. Drive to Survive in this episode models the waters when it tries to portray the search for the driver of the vacant Mercedes seat as the search for the lead driver, which is how it shoehorns George Russell into the conversation. With the spotlight on George, we get very harsh criticism that was thrown by Will Buxton, who constantly puts George down by saying that he makes too many mistakes and questioning races where he performs poorly. And I just want to say, makes too many mistakes seems to be the byword for almost every driver that has this arc of underperforming in the past, but finding his mojo and becoming a leader or a winner. I think the worst example of this is the British Grand Prix at Silverstone, where George, who started on pole, lost positions and ultimately was forced to retire due to water systems issue. Buxton's verdict that it was his race to lose, and he did, seems pretty harsh. Speaking of the British Grand Prix, very little attention is given to Lewis Hamilton, who actually won the race, which was his first since 2021, and was widely celebrated as finally Lewis proving to himself that he's not a has-been. Netflix only shows him taking the lead once when he tells Bono that he was not switching to Inters due to incoming rain. I love his little comment, "Leave it to me, mate." There was very little time spent on any congratulations, post-race celebrations, or the podium. This race was framed to be all about George, and that felt very wrong and anticlimactic.
I agree that the episode framing about George Russell was a bit disappointing, especially as a Hamilton fan, since his win and what it meant to him and the team deserved more focus. That said, I do understand that the goal was to highlight Russell's arc and growth within Mercedes. However, I do slightly agree with Will Buxton that it was Russell's race to lose. He's known as Mr. Consistency and has undeniable raw talent. However, his biggest criticisms are as a driver, he has a sense of entitlement and he struggles in handling race incidents. That has been evident, and we've discussed them before. It wasn't a given that Toto was going to move George into the lead role, and this race gave him pause. Because, as Toto put it, great drivers capitalize on a strong car in all conditions, wet or dry, using both raw talent and intelligence. Hamilton, Sainz, and Norris all adapted to the conditions and carried on while Russell struggled. Even with his car issues, I would have been surprised if he had maintained the position to take the win. I can't tell, honestly, if the negativity surrounding Russell stems a bit from imposter syndrome. He even said he needs to have more confidence in himself, or if it's ego. Regardless, he now leads the team for the upcoming season, and it will be interesting to see if he rises to the challenge.
Yeah, and I just want to say it's very interesting, especially watching in 2024, that at various times, Russell and Hamilton started at opposite ends of the grid and somehow always found each other and ended up next to each other. It was more likely to the fact that Lewis is amazing in racecraft. So no matter where he starts, he can always make it count and make the position that is more impressive at the lower he starts. Whereas for Russell, it's the opposite. He is usually very good in qualifying and then through various factors ends up dropping down the grid.
Lewis Hamilton's shoes are almost impossible to fill. Toto does have remorse over not signing Max, which is evident in his decision making and the conversations that happened leading to try to lure Max away to see if he'd be even willing to take the Mercedes seat. And it's circling back to this silly season, which we'll get into in a little bit. But regarding the attention to Lewis in Silverstone, the radio message from Toto to Hamilton when he crosses the line in P1 and was generally excited about what a great sign-off it is for them to achieve together. I do wish they showed the podium because that was quite a moment for Hamilton, who has such a legacy at Mercedes, and it had been so long since he had secured a race win.
Absolutely. And I wish they would show more of that because there were scenes that I remember watching with his mom. His entire family was at British Grand Prix. And especially when they showed him sobbing on his father's shoulder, that was so moving. And you saw how much this win meant for him. And there were subsequent interviews where he revealed his lifelong struggles with mental health. So this win just reframed his whole approach to what he was still capable of and how he could carry this momentum to Ferrari. And none of that was depicted in Drive to Survive.
He said numerous times in interviews, "I'm focused on this season. I am still with Mercedes. I want to get the best result for the team and myself." And this race did reinvigorate him, which was exciting to see because you see in subsequent races. He said in an interview also that this win meant so much because he forgot what it felt like to win, because the last win was in 2021. He went two full seasons without a win.
What this episode did was actually spend a little time on the new Mercedes driver, Andrea Kimi Antonelli, otherwise affectionately known as Kimi, who was in Formula 2 at the time. It is very clear that Toto absolutely adores him. Netflix shows that he even blows off a call with MBS, the head of FIA, because he likes watching Kimi testing more. And who wouldn't? Kimi is shown as a very focused 17-year-old who is still going to school and does not have his driver's license. It is very adorable, especially in the scene once he is announced as the Mercedes driver, when they're doing a photo shoot with him, Toto, and George. And one of the photographers says, "Where's Lewis?" And it's shown that George and Toto get the joke immediately, and Kimi takes a few tries.
It's that Italian learning the British humor.
Absolutely. But it was very, again, they didn't show him as being dumb, just, you know, very naive. Now we can focus on what Netflix missed. And this is just a fraction, because I feel like this episode ignored a lot. The first thing that I was surprised they did not show is George's win in Austria, which was the race before the Belgian Grand Prix. Now, granted, he won because he was third behind Lando and Max when they had their little dust-up. And he, in the eyes of some, inherited his win. But to me, this just shows that's how F1 works. Until the last lap, you never know what's going to happen. And the drivers in front of him just happened to take each other out. So he ended up being first because he put himself in positions to be third. The other thing that Netflix missed by not showing this ending is that there was a very funny bit where Toto got so excited that George could win the race that he actually got on the radio as George was braking, and George almost lost the car because he was so startled. And when he revealed that fact after the race, Toto officially and very publicly apologized.
I remember that happening live. I was like, oh man, please don't let Russell wreck because he got startled by Toto, who was so excited. One of the biggest misses from this episode and the season was the Belgian Grand Prix, also known as Spa. George had a phenomenal race at Spa. This was following Silverstone, where he had his DNF and was really trying to step up and that he could have more confidence and lead and take charge. So he actually made his own strategy call, which some might call a gamble, by having a one-stop pit strategy, which left him having to manage his depleting hard tires for the last 14 laps of the race. He successfully finished P1, and it was a 1-2 finish for Mercedes, with Hamilton crossing the line at P2. However, during post-race checks, George Russell was later disqualified from Spa because his car was found to be 1.5 kilograms underweight after the race, violating the minimum weight requirement. As a result of his disqualification, Lewis Hamilton was promoted to race winner. And for whatever reason, Netflix chose to leave those details out of this episode's narrative.
Even though I think it's completely unacceptable, Netflix may not have wanted to show disqualification because it would have affected the narrative that George finally demonstrated his leadership quality and was ready to be the leading Mercedes driver. However, it was still egregious. They still could have demonstrated the narrative that George made the right call that ultimately resulted in disqualification, which everyone admitted was more of a team's fault for not figuring out how to mitigate the consequence of one-stop strategy at Spa. But that impressed Toto nonetheless, since his words to George in the manufacturer's conversation at the end of the episode is, "You could not have done more." The other thing that Drive to Survive does not show is that at Monza, prior to the announcement that Kimi Antonelli would be the new Mercedes driver, Kimi was given the opportunity to participate in FP1. And I remember that FP1 session, which I actually watched, where I've never seen that many cameras on a car that wasn't a permanent F1 driver. Like, all the attention was focused on Kimi's car. Kimi actually crashed quite quickly in FP1. And it was a pretty magnificent crash. It was all the talk of that weekend. And Toto did not bat an eye and went on the radio to say, "All good, Kimi. All good." And afterwards talked about how the speed with which Kimi was going before he crashed was so impressive. And the interesting thing is, a lot of chatter was, is this going to give Mercedes a pause of choosing Kimi as their driver. Of course, it didn't. I think Toto's mind pulling back on the memories of missing out on Max Verstappen would not prevent anything from having Kimi get into that second Mercedes seat.
I believe Toto thinks Kimi is like the second coming of Lewis Hamilton and Max Verstappen all in one teenage individual. There is a lot of pressure on Kimi to do well. Let's chat about some superlatives, our best, worst, and most WTF moments from this episode, or maybe even some of the scenes that they decided to leave out. My very first one is a sweet one. It is for best cameo. You might have caught it, you might not, but we do get to see Roscoe Hamilton.
Yes, and I just want to say we saw Roscoe Hamilton. What we didn't see is the great big meetup, which is Roscoe Hamilton meeting Léa Leclerc. And just so everyone is clear, so Roscoe Hamilton is Lewis's dog, an English bulldog that is beyond adorable. And Charles Leclerc last year got also a dog, a puppy, whom he met named Leo. And they finally had their big meetup at the British Grand Prix. And I thought Netflix could have shown that meetup in all its glory.
They definitely missed an opportunity with that one. The next one is the most petty slight, and unfortunately, it goes to Toto Wolff, who was commenting after proudly confirming Kimi Antonelli as the Mercedes driver that kids who win in all junior categories go on to be the greats in the sport, like Max Verstappen, Michael Schumacher, and Ayrton Senna. Toto purposely leaving Lewis off that list was just a bit too petty for me.
Pretty enough, I would say. Well, on the opposite side of Toto, I actually have to give a positive superlative to Christian Horner. So hear me out. That superlative is most pragmatic stance. And this comes as Christian Horner is beset by questions about possibility of Max leaving Red Bull. So this is what he says. A contract is a contract. Somebody either wants to be in a team or they don't want to be in a team. If they don't want to be in the team, it's just the terms of which they can go. And this is a very measured response, not expected at all to come from Christian. But I think it applies more to Adrian Newey's situation, which of course Netflix does not show because it never really acknowledges Adrian Newey as an entity that made Red Bull what it was. He was shown a lot more in the first seasons, but never named and never having a line. But the big seismic shift that happened in 2024 is that Adrian Newey announced he's leaving Red Bull, and there was a war for his services, with the two top contenders being Ferrari and Aston Martin. And I just want to remind you of Papa Stroll's quote about his wallet, and that actually meant that Adrian Newey ended up in Aston Martin. The thing that makes it interesting is that everyone conceded that Red Bull was extremely fair. They allowed Adrian Newey to actually shorten his garden leave. So this quote from Christian, I think, explains why that happened to be, and actually puts Christian in a very mature footing that I normally don't associate with him.
And you have to remember, Christian at the time was also still going through his very public scrutiny of did he or did he not have inappropriate behavior with an employee who had filed a complaint. So I think he was pretty humbled. It is a pretty pragmatic response. I also think he has been a team principal of Red Bull for close to 20 years. I'm sure he has seen it all, although Adrian Newey is quite a loss. Adrian Newey is credited for designing the winning cars, and for them to lose Newey and his expertise really was difficult. And last year, when Mercedes was having such a difficult time with the porpoising, it was rumored that Lewis Hamilton actually purchased Adrian Newey's book and handed out a copy to every engineer within Mercedes. And that's what led to the turnarounds and the upgrades, which helped Mercedes.
Yes, the biggest what if is Adrian Newey going to Ferrari. But To turn around on a more positive note, another superlative that I have is best childish moment. Because when Toto wants to play in the playground, this is what you get. And that is Kimi Antonelli showing us his room, which has a teddy bear who is guarding his trophies, and he calls him Toto Bear.
I thought that was the sweetest thing I've ever seen.
It was. It just made you completely appreciate how adorably young he was.
There's a lot of silly season rumors and a lot of information that came out this week, and I am sure it has all to do with the hype surrounding the Australian Grand Prix. So one of the tidbits was that we have a best new nickname, which was given from Lewis Hamilton to Charles Leclerc, calling him Mr. Ferrari. Ina, your thoughts?
Ugh, not my nickname of choice. I get it, because of course, those two are so synonymous. I can't imagine him ever leaving Ferrari. So as the nicknames goes, could have been worse.
Scale of 1 to 10, what will we rate this new nickname?
5.
If you had to give Charles Leclerc a nickname, what would you give him?
Oh, that's a good one. I have to think about it.
Okay.
He has one, actually. But you know, one of his middle names is Percival. So mm-hmm. Prince Percival, I think, is adorable.
All right.
Mm-hmm.
Prince Percival. Let's see. Also, we saw that Stefano Domenicali has extended as F1 CEO through 2029. Ahead of Oscar Piastri's home Grand Prix, he has signed a multi-year deal with McLaren, which puts him on par with Lando Norris in regards of salary.
I think that is the juiciest news that we got, because first of all, it shows you that Mark Webber is the most amazing manager that ever lived, because Oscar's salary was estimated to be about $4 million and it jumped to 20. So that's a huge jump. But on the other hand, you have to think about Lando. He's been with the team so much, at least twice as long as Oscar, although they don't have formal number one driver, but he's primed to be the lead driver of McLaren, and he gets the same money as Oscar. So I feel that it may affect Lando in a way, not necessarily because he cares that much about the money, but it might affect him in thinking, how does the team view him in comparison to Oscar?
One of my favorite tidbits from the week is that we learned that Fred Vasseur and Lewis Hamilton actually began talking about his Ferrari move back in 2023 at the Monaco Grand Prix. This is also where there was a press conference and Charles Leclerc was asked about what he looks for in a teammate, and his very cheeky response was, "Hello, Lewis." And we were all hoping that was foreshadowing back in 2023, but we had to wait a full year until that was confirmed.
It's interesting. So did he say hello, Lewis, because he literally just saw him walking in? Or did he already hear about these conversations? So that was his way of putting it out there.
They were sitting next to each other on the couch already. So I always assume that was his way of putting it out there.
Wow, he wasn't subtle.
No, and when it happened back in 2023, he was trying to backtrack a little bit and frame it as, oh, he has so much experience, I have so much to learn from him. And Lewis was asked flat out, has Ferrari reached out? And he said no.
And I think that's the part of the press conference they showed in Drive to Survive. Why didn't they show the whole thing?
I don't know why they didn't show the whole thing, because literally the way Leclerc says, hello, Lewis, it is the cutest.
A lot of things he does is very cute.
Well, yes. And the other part of Hamilton giving him the nickname Mr. Ferrari, it talks about, you know, aside from his eyes, his hair, and how handsome the lad is, the thing that most impressed him is actually his work ethic. Your Prince Percival is the full package, Ina.
He is.
Another thing, Cadillac was confirmed officially for 2026 and launched their Instagram account to make it social media official. And the only drivers following the account are Mick Schumacher and Valtteri Bottas. What's next?
I have to say, I love Valtteri Bottas and how thirsty he is for any team that would have him. I love the dedication that Mick Schumacher shows in wanting to get into F1 one way or the other. But of all the drivers that have been mentioned for the Cadillac seats, I honestly don't see how he would be one of them.
I love Bottas And I'm not even quite sure he'd be best suited there, but I'd love to have him back on the grid. So if that's what it takes, more power to him and Cadillac.
Why don't you think he's not well suited for him?
I don't know. I just have him in my head as always Mercedes. So once he left Mercedes, I feel like he pulled a Daniel Ricciardo and just went backwards.
I agree that it would not be a step up. It would not really do anything except to keep him on the grid, but he's a great benchmark. So if I was Cadillac, who would be better? They keep saying Perez, and I get it that if they're concerned about sponsorships, there you go. That's your best move. But of the two of them, like I would take Bottas any day of the week.
I would take Bottas over Perez. I don't think Ricciardo's coming back. He just launched his rosé, so I think he's officially done with the track.
And I don't think we could handle any more
Should
Russian
we?
roulettes
No.
with Ricardo.
No. Former Red Bull sporting director Jonathan Wheatley will begin as Kick Sauber's team principal on April 1st. Another huge loss for Red Bull. And speaking of Red Bull, this to me might be the biggest one. From what I am gathering, George Russell is out of contract with Mercedes at the end of 2025. They have not entered contract negotiations. I believe that there was a lot of foreshadowing in this episode with the discussions for Max to make the move to Mercedes. There were sightings of Max's private jet and Toto's private jet having a very quick touchdown meeting. We all know Toto regrets not signing Max, and he would be a great fit for the car. And I could see his dream pairing being Max and Kimi, because I do think George has made a lot of mistakes, has not shown that true leader yet. We will see what he actually does this year. But I think the way Max to Mercedes was positioned in 2024 in this episode of Drive to Survive, I think it's just 2 years too early, and I would not be surprised if Toto was going after Max for 2026.
I agree. I think Toto is definitely going after Max, and it's not surprising that if he were to get him, it would be George who gets the cut. So I agree with you. I think the reason why I'm hesitant about this rumor is what is it for Max? Because yes, maybe he's not happy with the way that Red Bull is currently progressing. They are getting a new power unit in 2026, so who knows what that's going to be like. Plus, they all say it's the engine formula, meaning it's really the engine that determines the pecking order, in which case, I would say Mercedes is probably in the best position. But I honestly don't know if that will actually happen. Just because Toto wants it doesn't mean it happens. What we talked about a few episodes back is more intriguing, which is $1 billion that Papa Stroll is waving around Max, because Max is expensive. And I'm sure Toto is willing to throw as much money as needed to get him in. But if it is all about the money, look at what Max would get at Aston Martin. He would get Adrian Newey. He would get Honda engine with which he won all of his drivers' championships. So that is just as realistic as the Mercedes offer. But even if, let's say, Max to Mercedes was a reality, where would George end up? Would Red Bull take him? He's a Mercedes Academy driver. I don't see that happening.
I don't see Red Bull taking him.
I think actually another speculation that I have seen is George to Cadillac. And initially that seemed preposterous. But again, if we see McLaren are happy, I don't think Ferrari is about to change anything soon. Red Bull, we just talked about, probably not going to take him. Those are the top teams. So where does he go? Obviously, we have so many rookies. Some of them, just by law of averages, may not work out. There could be an opening in one of those teams. But there is a team that needs two drivers. One should have experience and be young enough to stick with them as they grow. And George fits that bill.
Yeah, I could see George going to Cadillac. George with Bottas, George with Perez, George with Sebastian Vettel.
George with Bottas will be Amazing. Ex-Mercedes reunited. If their little dust up in Imola 2021, when Toto was deciding who was going to be in that second Mercedes seat, if that's any indication, then the Cadillac partnership could be explosive. The only thing is, I feel like Cadillac would want one driver to be American.
I do think they'd want an American. However, Bottas is back as a reserve driver at Mercedes, and their social media has had to do a little to say the dust has settled. There's no issue. I think both drivers have come out and saying that whatever was in the past is in the past, and they're good now.
Well, if anything that we learn from 2024, George knows how to keep a grudge, and we will address that at a future episode. Overall, Netflix was off their game in this episode and missed quite a bit while trying to present Mercedes' search for their lead second driver in the most engaging and meaningful way. George Russell did not get an edit that sets him up as the Mercedes' next big hope, and everything seems to rest on Kimi Antonelli's super young shoulders. Next week, we will dive into the saga of Carlos Sainz as he decides which team to join after he realizes that neither Red Bull nor Mercedes are considering him, and McLaren is not changing their driver lineup. We will catch up with James Vowles, the team principal for Williams, and meet new personalities from teams that have not yet been featured in season 7, including a very clear but quite entertaining new villain of the paddock.
The 2025 Formula One season roared to life this past weekend with the Australian Grand Prix at Melbourne's Albert Park, delivering a spectacle of high drama, strategic gambits, and a baptism by storm based on the weather they had down under. Lando Norris secured victory at the season opener, navigating intense late pressure from Max Verstappen. The race was full of rain, safety cars, and ever-evolving pit strategies to seize the early championship lead. Let's talk about this wet and wild opener, Ina.
It was definitely a great way to start the season, although we have to be completely honest. It was brutal to watch what was happening to Ferrari, but I think we should the end of our discussion because the level of frustration I feel was going to mar all the better aspects of the race that we saw. I definitely think it is wild how different the conditions were for qualifying and the race. And it was also wild to expect the rookies to handle the pressure as well as some of them did and not cause the accidents that also some of them did. I think for me, the person who stole my heart is Lance Stroll. To give Lance Stroll credit, he ended up P6. How did he end up P6? We do not know because it never showed him. He started P13. The person who stole my heart was Kimi Antonelli, who did not have a good qualifying. Obviously, he had a floor and suspension broken. Granted, he went through the gravel, so it was a bit self-inflicted, but he ended up in P16. And I did not expect in this weather for him to make much of a progress or not even crash because, again, the circumstances were quite dire. However, what I've heard about Kimi is he's incredible in wet weather and he does some really brave overtakes. We did not see them as much as I would have liked, and a lot of his movement was less due to his overtakes than to safety cars, very perplexing strategy decisions by cars in front of him. But at the end of the day, he ended up in P4, right next to his teammate, George Russell, in P3. And by the way, they showed so little of Russell, I sometimes forgot he was in the race. But I also thought it was very interesting that last year there was this refrain that no matter where George and Lewis qualify, they end up being together by the end of the race. So that happened this time again with Kimi and George. And also, the last time George was in the race, his teammate went from P16 to P4. And that happened in this race as well with a completely different teammate. And the final point I want to make is that he was actually given a penalty, Kimi did, which put him in P5, which also a great result. But in a move that I did not see coming, FIA reversed the decision on appeal, and he ended up still in P4.
I am glad that they reversed that decision for P4. We can't not talk about the Australian curse. And it goes back to 2022. Charles Leclerc wins the race the following year, DNFs. Max Verstappen wins the Grand Prix 2023 the following year, DNFs. Carlos Sainz, Grand Prix winner last year, DNFs in this race. So I guess we'll see what happens for Norris next year if the curse continues. But overall, the expectation going into the race was that it was going to be a bit wet and wild because of the conditions, and the engineers and the strategies were really going to be tested along with the driver's talent and skill and see what they could do. Adding six rookies into the mix, and my heart went out to Isaac Hadjar in the formation lap. I could not believe he spun out the way that he did. And we saw it happen a couple times with two of the other rookies. They hit the race line, it was greasy, and the inexperience just took them out of the race. And we saw that with Doohan also, and even the experienced ones, Sainz and Alonso. I mean, we had six DNFs in our first race of the season, which is kind of crazy. And you know, Hamilton was saying after the race, the car just kept wanting to go into the barrier, and keeping it out of the barrier was a successful race in and of itself, which is wild, not what anybody expected out of Hamilton's first race at Ferrari.
Exactly. And to the point of DNFs, I don't know if you know this, Aaron, but every time since I think the official start of this particular racetrack on the grid was in the 80s, there's been at least three DNFs every race. And it doesn't rain every year. So it could be also the nature of the track that makes it treacherous. Plus, adding the rain doubled the DNFs this time.
I did not know that, but I have heard how difficult the track is. So, you know, we had two rookies finish. Ollie did not get points. He had a really difficult weekend in general. And I think that also had a lot to do with the car itself, because we saw what he could do last year. So we'll give him the benefit of the doubt and say that has to do with more with the car that Haas has given him than hopefully his skill level. But I agree with you, Kimi Antonelli. What a race. I know Norris technically got driver of the day. I personally would have given it to Antonelli, because he did go from 16 to 4. He lived up to his own hype. Like, he is the most hyped up rookie, and he delivered. So kudos to him. Kudos to Toto. I did see that Toto was watching all three drivers. He was watching Russell, Antonelli, and Hamilton, because he's so used to tracking Hamilton and forgot that he's competition.
Well, to give Toto credit, maybe he knew. He just wanted to know, how did Hamilton do? Which, yeah, again, we'll get to it. It wasn't great.
No, it was not the performance he wanted or what I think anybody was hoping to see out of him.
So in terms of who broke our hearts, besides Ferrari, is there anyone else who stands out?
Well, Hadjar broke my heart when he spun out in formation lap. That was really sad. I thought it was very unfortunate they followed him as long as they did. But I thought it was really sweet how Anthony Hamilton consoled him and comforted him, because Isaac looks up to Lewis, and having Lewis's dad there was very kind. I do think the cameras played both of those up quite a bit, but were also on an aborted start, and they probably needed to fill some airtime, and you know, they worked with what they had.
Anthony Hamilton was the best representations of dads on the grid. However, the person who broke my heart was Jack Doohan, because he set up his expectations so high, because he actually was a great qualifier in the qualifying. He just got very unlucky that unfortunately Lewis spun right as he was doing his flying lap, so he couldn't complete his lap to the best of his ability in Q2, and that caused them to be out of Q2, but still better than anyone expected of him. And the fact that he spun out as quickly as he did, granted, Carlos Sainz spun out almost immediately afterwards behind safety car, which kind of shows that this was just bad luck and obviously inexperience. But we know that Jack Doohan has a very limited contract, rumored to be only six races. So this was number two of six, and that Flavio Briatore, the advisor to Alpine, which we'll get into in future episodes, is looking for a way to get him out of that seat. And so this just, I think, gave all the excuses Alpine needed to get him out of the seat. And so I feel bad for him because I honestly don't think he's as bad as everyone thinks or as people predicted. And it was just very unfortunate where I thought he had a chance to show that he was better than everyone thought he was.
I agree. I think the conditions and the track itself did him no favors, and hopefully China will give him a bit of redemption there next week. I was hoping that he would have done a bit better than he did. With the amount of safety cars, I thought race control did a great job, except for Alonso's crash. That should have been a red flag. I thought it was extremely dangerous given the track conditions, having people out on the track clearing his car. I do not understand why that did not go to a red flag.
Oh, completely agree with you. But back to Dewan for just one second. I just want to say there's another Australian curse, and that is no Aussie has been even on the podium, not to mention winning. So we have two in this race, which was Jack Dewan. The other one, Oscar Piastri, looked very much primed to at least finish second. And there were moments when it looked like he could have raced Norris. There were some team orders that may have been given because of safety concerns. Let's just go with that. But as Oscar said, I'm faster than him, meaning Lando. So there were all these expectations. It looked like when he first lost the position to Max and then gained it back, I really had a lot of hopes. And then Lando spun out and Oscar spun out, got on the grass. The graphic showed him being out of the race, and I honestly thought he was. So, what really captured my heart is the fact that he did not give up. He took him forever to back out of that grass. He was a lap down. And of course, because of the superior car that he has, he managed to get to P9, which I think was insanely brave, a very good showing of his determination, persistence, just never die attitude. And as this race showed, until that moment when both Lando and Oscar went off, we thought this is the order they're going to end up with. So having this late race debacle happening to McLaren, nobody could predicted that. So that was good to see because it shows how he's willing to gamble, but also believe in himself. Just to put it in context, there were times last year where drivers did not want to go on once they found themselves greatly out of position. I know he's your favorite, but Lewis Hamilton was definitely one of them. And there are reasons for why he might have felt that way. And there are so many other factors. Also, in the episode that we review of Drive to Survive with Lando and Max in Austria, after they collided, Lando did not want to proceed. And he actually went into the pits because he was done. I think that shows Oscar's maturity and just his will, which I think at times probably is as important, if not more, than talent.
Well, remember, we talk about what it takes to make a great driver, and a lot of the team principals have said it too. It's their grit, their resilience, their determination. And Oscar showed all of that. The fact that he dug deep and reversed out of the grass, no matter how long it took him to do that, he was a lap down. He came back and he overtook Hamilton at the end, which I personally didn't love, but I was cheering for Oscar because I was also hoping he would break that Australian curse. And I thought at one point he was going to overtake Norris. I thought the podium was going to be Piastri, Norris, Verstappen. It ended up being Norris, Verstappen, Russell. But there was that burst of excitement in the 40s laps before we got the last safety car. And it was basically a sprint shootout where we saw a potential Ferrari 1-2. And in my mind, I'm like, there is no way this is going to hold on. But what a dream would it be if this was how the race would actually finish? Can we finish the race now before Ferrari can do Ferrari things? As my first race as a Ferrari fan, and we can get into the heartbreak that Ferrari caused us.
I think we should because you set it up perfectly. So they qualified solo, seventh and eighth, and it was just a disaster. I mean, we had Alex Albon in a Williams qualify ahead of them. And just to give context, maybe Williams is better than we all think, but there's no way that should happen. Second, Yuki Tsunoda in an RB, the second Red Bull car, qualified ahead of Ferrari. Let's just go through where Ferrari ended behind a Sauber, which was the worst car last year, and I don't think they've spent that much time in development this year. Then they ended up behind, the greatest, Lance Stroll. Again, Aston Martin could be better than we think, but everyone thinks that they are developing the 2026 car. They aren't really putting any time into the 2025 car. So, what the hell is going on with Ferrari? In the beginning of the race, when Leclerc managed to get P5, at least he made some moves. One of them was on Lewis Hamilton, but I think that's fair play. But Lewis, the fact that he was stuck behind Albon for at least the first stint, that was unexpected. I just kept waiting. Okay, Lewis is gonna go through now. And then I thought maybe Lewis is smart because once Carlos Sainz spun off, I'm like, Albon's gonna be next. And maybe he's just waiting for that whole thing to happen before he makes the risk of trying to overtake. Nope.
He was stuck, I kept saying to myself as I was watching. Why is he still behind Albon? How is it possible we're this many laps in? He's still behind Albon. What is going on?
Then that's where the strategy comes into play because the weather started to improve. Basically, everyone switched to slicks or dry tires. And it seemed like, okay, maybe now something's going to happen. Although, correct me if I'm wrong, I think both Albon and Yuki were on mediums, and our Ferrari drivers were on hards.
That's correct.
So, the medium tire, this is one thing I learned this weekend, is that apparently it's grippier on a wet track than the hard tire. Now, if that's a common wisdom, why the hell wouldn't Ferrari put them on medium? Or, I know for Ferrari this is hard, split the freaking strategy, put one on medium, one on hard, see what happens.
But McLaren had both of them on hard, and Max was on medium.
Correct. That's my point. Follow the one with a good strategy. And that's usually Red Bull because McLaren has also messed up their strategies once or twice. So they're not on point yet. That's the choice they could have made that could have made a difference. Then, because the rain, they kept predicting a lot of rain and people were started to switch to inters. So at first, I thought Ferrari made a gamble. It was definitely a gamble to stay out on their slick tires. And that's how they got to 1-2 because everyone in front of them pitted. No. Ferrari just took forever to realize that, oh no, the rain is not going to stop and it's not going to dry out before the end. So we're going to switch to inter tires when everyone else switched, which doesn't take a genius to figure out. You're going to lose so much position, and they were behind a safety car. So there were only going to be a few laps left when the safety car would go in, and then you're going to be stuck at the end. And that's exactly what happened. So the strategy, again, this is another point where, yes, Ferrari made the wrong gamble. But at the end of the day, again, I think they should have split the difference, meaning Leclerc apparently wanted to switch at the same time as Max, so let him switch and see what happens.
I agree. I don't think it would have been a bad idea for them to split strategy. I'm still learning Ferrari because remember, part of me is still programmed to watch Mercedes and see what they're doing. And they had a great race. Hamilton, you could definitely tell, is learning his new engineer. He was with Bono for 12 years. I know this has been a huge learning curve for him. I think everyone is hopeful he was going to have a better race. Clearly, it's going to take a couple races. I wasn't watching F1 at the time, but I think it took him 6 months at Mercedes to win his first Grand Prix. My guess is the expectation should be at least 6 months, maybe an entire season before he wins a Grand Prix at Ferrari. So if he can learn the team, the car in those different conditions, and his engineer, and then help Leclerc in his positioning and with Ferrari for the constructors. I think that would be a great season for everybody. Clearly, there's challenges with what the information the engineer was giving him to what he wanted, and they're working through that. Leclerc had the gem of, we'll add that to the wisdom of Ferrari about the water, which is that water, rainwater or drink water? I don't, either way, that was pretty comical when
It
those
was fun.
radio messages came up.
For context, he said, "Do I have a leakage?" And they're like, "What are you experiencing?" He's like, "There's water in my seat." And his engineer goes, "That's water." And Leclerc, with perfect comedic timing, says, "Let's add this to the words of wisdom." So I think that was the highlight, really, of the whole Ferrari experience. Say about Hamilton that it will take him a while. This was the first time he experienced Ferrari in the wet. And that's unfortunate because there were so many things that were not working. But the other thing is, and I don't think it will necessarily affect Lewis, but it has affected a lot of his fans. This is the worst performance for a new veteran driver in Ferrari. I think it's the second worst ever.
I'm okay with that. I have enough faith in him that he will bounce back and prove them all wrong. I'm not going to let any statistic rain on my Lewis Hamilton parade because I'm not a fair weather fan. I am a dedicated fan. I think he will figure it out.
I
And
agree. I don't think Lewis will take that statistic as anything
accept
important.
motivation. He will use that as motivation.
Yes. But I think we shouldn't expect miracles.
Oh, I'm not expecting a miracle. I would hope next year he wins a Grand Prix in Ferrari. I would love to see him on a podium in Ferrari this year. That would be fantastic. But my expectation is that there is a learning curve and a learning year. And I'm okay with that. If he does better than expected, fantastic. I'm setting realistic to low expectations with the expectation he will prove me wrong.
Speaking of expectations, so what is your expectation for the next race, which Ferrari has never done well on that track? And Leclerc really put their chances down by saying, we've never done well, not enough time to do anything different with the car, so don't expect much.
My grid expectations for Shanghai will be dominance from McLaren. I'm expecting both Ferrari drivers to end in points in the top 10. I'm expecting the rookies to step it up a bit. It was brutal with the rain, so I expect the rookies to do a little bit better. I expect Lance Stroll and Hülkenberg to be back to where we thought they would be in this race. I expect Kimi will probably do well again.
Okay, well, a lot of them tracks with what you said. I'll temper my expectation in that for Ferrari, I just want them to end up higher. I don't even care if, I mean, ideally in both qualifying and race, but let's say at least in one of those sections. Oh, we'll, because it's also a sprint weekend, I'll throw a sprint. So either in the sprint, in qualifying, or in race to be higher than they were at those stages in Australia. For the rookies, I really hope Ollie Bearman has a better showing. I mean, he had a horrible weekend. The interesting thing, he finished the race, last of the people who actually finished, and his pace wasn't that off from Ocon. I think they just have a crappy car. But the fact that he had two crashes, could not do one practice session, could not do any qualifying, like it's got to be better than this because that created a lot of concern. I do hope for the rookies to be better, especially Hajar and Doohan. I really want them to have a redemption race, even
Me
if they don't
too.
get that high, but at least finish. Yes. And then for the winner, it's got to be McLaren. I just don't see anyone else right now being able to challenge them. And it's probably not going to be a wet race, and they're even better on the dry. So it's probably going to be Lando, although, as usual, redemption for Oscar. I kind of think it would be great if he could win this one.
I would love to see Oscar win this Grand Prix. for the 1-2 of McLaren. And then who would you predict on the podium? If we have both McLarens this go round, are you thinking it's going to be a Mercedes or a Red Bull?
How can you discount Max?
You can't.
You can't, because unfortunately, I know it's not going to be Ferrari, so I'm not even going to be insane about it. Mercedes, I don't think they're stronger than Red Bull, but I just know that Max is a beast in this Red Bull, and it doesn't matter how bad it actually is, he will make sure it gets to where it needs to go.
Now that we're looking ahead with McLaren's dominance and the rookies' baptism by storm, the 2025 season promises thrilling narratives and intense battles. And I'm sure teams will undoubtedly analyze the Australian Grand Prix's outcome as they gear up for China. Thanks so much for hanging out with us. If you enjoyed this episode, do not forget to hit that subscribe button so you will never miss an update.
We'd also love to hear from you, whether it's your thoughts on today's episode, your suggestions for F1 books, shows, or movies to explore, or a shout out to your number one. Connect with us on Instagram, YouTube, or X, or drop us an email at readingthegrid@gmail.com. We want your ideas to fuel this podcast, so don't be shy.
Thanks for joining us on Reading the Grid. Keep your engines running and your pages turning. Until next time.